Do you struggle with mom guilt? Do you find it difficult to find a balance between your personal and professional pursuits and your family? Do you feel like you're just keeping your head above water and giving more and more of yourself than you have to give? And is it hard to say no when people ask you to do more? These are a few of the issues that we talk about in this episode. If you're ready to understand how to combat the mom guilt, how to take control of your time and your happiness, we'd like to welcome you to You Already Own. Hello and welcome to another episode of You Already Are. I am your host, Alyssa Carlson, and this is my co-host,
Michael Gardner.
We are so happy to be here. We have a special guest today. We have Shannon Rozier with us today, and she is a former university professor turned life coach for working moms. Wow. As a leader in the tech industry, she knows the particular challenges working moms face, including guilt, lack of time, and gender discrimination. She's on a mission to change that. Shannon believes that a mom doesn't have to choose between her family and her career. Through her Optimize 30 program, Shannon coaches moms to become masters of their time so they can kill it as a mom while also being wildly successful in their careers. Shannon is married to one handsome honey babe, Jake, and has the three cutest biological kiddos on the planet, ages 3 to 9 years old. And she's also a foster mom and loves that journey. We are so excited to have you with us, Shannon. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Yeah, we actually just got two new foster kids in the last few weeks. So I am now a mother of five, all under the age of 9.
How crazy. Is it?
It's wild. Our house hasn't been clean for a couple of weeks. Everyone is trying to get used to not sleeping very well. Well, we're trying to get used to each other, but also not sleeping very well. Because a lot of times when little kiddos come to us in foster care, they're having night terrors and they're scared because there's the trauma of being placed in a home where they have never been before. And then there's the trauma that they experienced, like the reason they came into care in the first place. So a lot of not sleeping, a lot of patience and understanding is happening right now as they get settled and we're trying to figure out this new norm. But yeah, five kids at the moment.
Wow. That's a full house.
My wife and I had two foster children years ago, back in the 80s. So we adopted them. And so they call me dad. I mean, we raised them. Yeah. Not my current wife, but former wife. But yeah, it's went through some of that.
They're your kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. People ask me, you know, do I wish I would have had a biological child? Sure. But I don't think I could love it more than I love my children. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, in fact. So we've only had these kids for 2 weeks. And last Friday, the caseworker said, hey, we might have found a family member that the kids can go to. And of course, they prioritize kinship placement, like a family member placement over a foster parent. And I was at the grocery store the next day and talking to the grocery lady, and I just started crying because I just already love them so much. And I'm like, I love you like my own children. And I just can't imagine you leaving at this point. And so you just get so attached to these kids very quickly, which honestly is exactly what most of them need. Most of them just need love and attachment because the attachments that they've had before maybe aren't healthy. And so that's exactly what they need, but it sure is hard.
Oh yeah. I can imagine. So you have five kids at home now and you work full time.
Yep.
So what does that look like? And I'm assuming your husband works.
He doesn't. My husband is a stay-at-home dad. Yep.
Oh, wow.
So for most of our marriage, we both worked full-time. And so we've had our biological kids at the time, you know, in and out of various daycares, nannies, like we did it all. And then a couple of years ago, I think it was 2021. So the pandemic we were just kind of coming out of the pandemic. We actually brought my husband home because my oldest was diagnosed with epilepsy. And so between that and working full time and everything and daycare costs were crazy at that time, we brought him home. And so I've been working full time and the plan was for him to go back to work. Like that's what our plan always was. And things just changed. And we're like, you know what, we should probably be foster parents. And that journey takes a lot of time and patience and love. And so we said, okay, yeah, we'll keep you home for that. And so that's kind of what our path is right now, is stay-at-home dad and I'm the working mom.
That's amazing. That's what I grew up with. My mom worked full-time pretty much the whole time I was young. And my dad worked like on and off, but he was kind of like the stay-at-home dad. So different dynamic. Yeah.
So cool.
So cool.
It is. And our society just does not appreciate that or approve of that dynamic in some ways. Like, I mean, everyone just kind of assumes like, oh, he should be working. Like he must be working too. And it's like, actually he doesn't.
And the pressure that men feel with that, in addition to women, is like women are getting the guilt and the shaming of not being with their kids and not being the stay-at-home mom. But the men also get the pressure of like, you should be a provider. You should be the one doing this and that. Like, I remember my dad really struggling, and my mom even really struggling with that concept of like, my mom felt judged and she felt like it was wrong of her to work. And she would always complain about how, you know, like she wishes she was a stay-at-home mom or whatever, but she is a career woman. Like that's what it drives her. You can see that. Like I remember times when she wouldn't be working and she was just not happy. She did not like staying home, and that's okay.
But then there's guilt for that. Like then you feel guilty because you're like, I should want to stay home full time and I should want to do this. And it's like, hey, I love my children to death, but I don't love them 24 hours a day. You know what I mean? Like,
okay.
I mean, I do, but I don't want to be with them 24 hours a day.
So, I mean, some women, I genuinely believe they were just like, what fills their cup is being a stay-at-home mother, is being a caretaker, being a nurturer, taking care of the house, taking care of the kids. That fills their cup. They feel very fulfilled and satisfied. And I think that's beautiful. But I don't think that fits everybody's bill. I don't think everybody fits into that mold. Some women want more. Some women want something different, you know. And I feel like our society inadvertently is against it. I don't think that people think like, oh, you know, like it's so wrong for women to be in the workforce. I feel like most people are coming around to that idea. But it's just like we still internalize the idea that we should be home with our kids and we should love our kids 24/7, like you said, and want to be with them constantly, always, you know. So that was actually one of my questions. So how do you help women overcome that guilt that comes with being a working mom?
Yeah, that is such a great question. And you know what? Guilt is sneaky. It comes up in different ways, because right now I'm in a place where I'm like, okay, do you know what? I don't feel guilty for working because I am taking care of my children. It's just taking care of my children in a different way. I'm not changing diapers all day long, but you know what? The money that I'm making right now actually buys those diapers, and it buys the food that they eat, and it provides our house. Like, so I am taking care of my children. It just looks a little different. But where I was thinking as you were talking, the guilt sneaks up on me in different ways. Like, for example, with these two new kids, I'm just not with them all the time. My husband has spent the most time with them as they've come into our home. And you all know, being parents, that kids like things a certain way. And one child in your family might be completely different from the other, even down to like how you hold them to snuggle them, or like, hey, don't put crusts on their peanut butter sandwich, or she's not going to eat peanut butter, but she'll eat the cheese. He won't eat the cheese. Like, these are some of the things we've been learning the past couple of weeks about these two new kiddos in our home. And where I've been feeling guilty is I'll come home and I don't know those things. And so I'll do something wrong, quote unquote wrong, that one of them doesn't like because I don't know. And because I'm the mom, I feel like I should know. And my husband has to be like, oh, do you know what? Like, he actually prefers being held this way. And she actually likes cheese, but she doesn't like peanut butter. So don't give her peanut butter and jelly sandwiches right now. And that's been kind of hard for me, because it's like, it's just kind of like I choke up a little bit, like, oh, I'm a terrible mom because I don't know that. And that is just not true. So even now, like, I'm not perfect at it. I have to remind myself, like, well, of course I don't know that. I wasn't here today. But that doesn't mean I love them any less. That doesn't mean that I'm any less of a mom. So to answer your question, like, helping my clients and even helping myself, sometimes it's a simple reframe. Like, how are you taking care of your kids, number one? And what are you doing for them? Which is kind of what I was describing there. And then the other way that I help my clients as well is helping them understand what enough is for them. because a lot of them feel guilty because they don't feel like they're doing enough. They're not doing all the things. They're not changing all the diapers. They're not giving all the meals. They're not there to, you know, kiss all of the ouchies when they happen. And it's helping them reframe what it means to be doing enough as a mom or to be a good mom for them. Like, what does that mean? It may not mean changing the diapers. It may not mean waking up in the middle of the night with a newborn to feed them. Like, maybe hiring a doula is actually helping you be a better mom. That's the new trend at my work right now, is that a lot of the new moms are hiring nighttime doulas to feed their kids. And so it's, what is enough for you? What does it mean to be a good mom? Helping them understand what that is so that they know, okay, I don't have to do everything, but I know for me that when I show up in this certain way, I'm a good mom.
That's interesting that you bring that up. There's a book that I've referenced a couple of times on the podcast called 10X is Easier Than 2X. I don't know if you've read that.
Yes. I have not read it, but I've read parts of it. And it, yes.
It's like, yes. Okay, so he talks about how you want to be the best mom. And this is like, he talks about career people, but he talks about you want to be the best mom. You need to find the 20% of things that make you the best mom and focus on those things and let go of the other 80% that you think that you have to do. Because that 80% is just filling up a bunch of time, causing a bunch of stress and anxiety. But that 20%, that really small portion, is what really makes a big difference and makes you the best mom you can be. And that is something that I had to learn just, I've been learning it just over the past month, you know, and we've had a nanny for a long time, and I've used them on and off to help watch my kids or to help me keep the house clean, because let's be real, for children that are, you know, ages 0 to 8, it's hard to keep a house clean. And so yeah. I have somebody who helps me with that. But I've realized, you know, I'm starting this podcast and I'm starting other projects and things, and it's like, I've realized that the time that I spend with my kids, if I can focus my efforts on those moments and those times with my kids rather than feeling like I have to be with them 24/7 to make them feel loved, that's what they're going to get. That's what they're going to remember, and that's what they're going to hold on to, is that 20% that I give them. They're not going to think, well, my mom was never around. You know, they're going to think, my mom is amazing. My mom does these things. Like, I painted my girl's nails on Sunday and it was the best thing, you know, and just like little things like that, that I know that brings them joy and it brings me joy. And those are my 20%. The grocery shopping, the cleaning my house, the, you know, even I drive my kids to school, but I don't always pick them up. And so that is another one of those things that's like, I don't necessarily need to do that. But what I do want to do is I want to be there for them when they need some emotional help and when they need, you know, a confidant. And I want to be there to teach them how to have a good mindset and how to grow. And like, that's the things that I care about. All of the other stuff, as far as like my keeping my house orderly, you know, all that stuff, it's not something that I need to focus on, especially because my time is getting more and more filled up with my projects that I'm doing, right? And as a career woman, that happens. It's like you have time that you're spending on the things that bring you joy, which make you a better mom in all reality. Like, when you're doing what you love and when you're filling your cup, that is making you a better mom. But it's not going to make you a better mom if you're thinking about all these other things that you feel like you should be doing, like you were saying. So it's like, focus on that 20%, right? That's what makes you a great mom.
Yeah, because that 20%, that's one of my favorite principles. And that's actually something I teach my clients in my program, is that 20% is what gets you 80% of the results. And so if you kind of flip-flop that, if you're only spending 20% and that's getting you all of the results in whatever area of your life, then that means 80% of what you're doing is actually a waste of time. 80% of what you're doing is not achieving the goals that you want to achieve. And so many moms that I work with are just, because they have so much on their plate, they're just taking things as they come and fighting fires. That's all they're doing, is they're fighting fires. They're not taking a breath to figure out, like, do I even need to fight this fire? Is it even important to me? So, and I'll give you an example of this. When my little girl was, oh my goodness, actually it started when she was one, her first birthday, I was so excited to be a mom. I had waited a long, 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 long time to be a mom. And for me, I was so excited about making the Pinterest and Instagram worthy birthday cake. You know the one I'm talking about, the smash cake that is beautiful, that it is Instagram worthy. Yep. And it was a failure. Like, I failed. It's just this terribly ugly cake. She ate it and it was great. The next year, I'm like, okay, I'm going to try this again. We're going to have a better cake. And I went through 3 cakes that year. And that year, I was up so late the night before her birthday party when all our family and friends were coming. And I'm trying to get this cake to be like Instagram worthy. And I'm just like, I hate this. Like, I'm so stressed. I'm sitting here crying, eating cake crumbs off of this plate. And my husband was videoing me at the time. I'm like, seriously, I want to punch you in the face. And I'm glad he videoed me because now it's great. Like 7 years later, it's awesome. And then after that, like I paused and I was just like, okay, I am doing all of this work, taking all of this time to make this darn cake that she's 2 and she doesn't even appreciate. Like, what is it that I really want to achieve by making this cake? And what I wanted to achieve was, one, like a really great cake to celebrate her birth. But I was like, you know what? I want to do this to be closer to her. I want to be a good mom and close to her. So the next year we started going to the grocery store and letting her pick out her cake that she wanted. And that's what we've done with all of our kids. Is it more expensive? Absolutely. Does it taste as good as a homemade cake? Not a chance. However, is it great? Is it beautiful? Yes. But what matters to me is the 20 to 30 minutes I spend individually with my kids picking out that cake and then seeing their excitement of like, oh, I get a Barbie cake this year. This is awesome. That was the thing that mattered most to me. It wasn't that I was making the cake. It was the experience with her and the cake. And so it was like, I just needed to pause and see, okay, what is the result I really want? What's that 20% that's important to me? Let's go for that and let's get rid of the rest. I don't make cakes anymore.
There you go. I mean, you did, you identified something that you could let go of. And I think that that is so essential when you're trying to find any amount of happiness and you're feeling anxiety and stress over this and that. It's like, ask those questions, ask those really important questions. Like, what do you really want? What are you trying to do? What are you trying to get out of this moment, out of this thing that you're trying so hard to accomplish? Like, what do you want? And that goes for everyone, including, you know, as a mother, but also as a career woman and as somebody who, or even just in life, like, what do you want out of life? And what are you doing right now that is not getting you there? Like, what are you doing that's useless right now? Because there's so many things that we do that, like, really, we want our results, but the things that we're doing aren't actually giving us what we really want. It's just like that superficial, like that Instagram picture perfect moment, right? I mean, sometimes we get caught up in that and then yeah. We realize, wait, that's not what I care about. I care about my child. I care about celebrating her. I care about loving her and showing my love for her, right? And that may not be making a cake. It may be, like you said, taking them to the grocery store to pick out a cake and spending time with them that matters to them, right?
Yeah. And creating those traditions, things that they look forward to, like, this is what I do on my birthday. And it's something that's special with me and my mom. And you know what? 20 minutes is what they remember. They don't remember the hours I spent making 3 birthday cakes because I kept messing up. It wasn't good enough. Like, they don't remember that. So that's not the results I wanted. Sometimes the results are completely unaligned with what you're doing, but we just need to step back and recognize what's happening.
Michael, do you have anything to share on that?
Just to add, you know, I think it's when we step out of doing what we should do to be a good mom and we get clear on why we're doing it to get close to our children, because there's no, how do you define a good mom? There's no real definition. But if the results are that we're creating a connection, we stop shooting on ourselves and we start acting with purpose. And I'll tell you what my kids remember about me. You know, even though my wife and I got divorced and at home was kind of uneasy at times, they remember that I got up and went to work every day. And they saw that as I cared about taking care of my family. That's back when I worked at a corporate job, that I rode bikes with them and I took them trick-or-treating. That's their memories of, and we're close, you know. That's it. Of all the things that went on, all the ugliness, even in the divorce, they remember that about me.
But they don't remember you changing their diapers or remembering you made cheese and crackers for lunch or peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Like, it's the things that really mattered that they remember. And I love that you said stop shitting on yourself, because it's so true. We should we tell ourselves we should do these things so unnecessarily at times. And a lot of times it's because of what society and our culture expects of us, but it's not even what's really going to move the needle for our relationship with our kids or our own personal growth and career progression.
So I'm going to ask you, saying no. My mother had a hard time with saying no, not to us kids. You know, can I have a Coke? No. But to everybody else, you know, she was the president of the women's organization, and somebody would call up and she just couldn't say no. She couldn't say no. This is what I got to do. This is what I got to do. The importance of being willing to say no, because sometimes yes does not serve. So any thoughts on that?
Oh, yes. This is something that comes up over and over again with my clients, because we equate saying no with, I don't know of a better way to say this, but basically being mean. I'm a bad person if I say no. So like the women's organization comes to me and asks me to do a service project or coordinate a service project. If I say no, I'm not fulfilling my obligations to them. So therefore I must be a bad person. Or, you know, the PTA comes to me and says, hey, can you volunteer on field day? And if I say no, I can't, then I'm not contributing to my child's school and their learning and success. And so then I feel like a bad person. So we'll end up saying yes. So one, we don't feel like a bad person, but we also don't want to disappoint other people. And that's also a big thing too, is we don't want to be that disappointment. And so a couple of things that I'll tell people is people are going to react however they're going to react. You could say no or yes, and people could be happy and they could be resentful. And what you need to understand is that they're in charge of their feelings. What's creating their feelings and their emotions is a thought that they're having. My actions, my words are not going to jump out of my body and create a feeling or an emotion in someone else's body. It's their own thoughts about my words, about the actions that I take. So I've learned I can say no with great love. I can tell someone, no, I can't do that. I still love you. So no, and I love you.
See, my mom, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
My mom would say yes and resent it.
Yes.
Yes. She would just resent it. Why do they keep asking me? Well, because you say yes.
Right.
And they know you will. And my dad would get mad at her, and it caused a conflict in the home. But she had to say yes, so these other people are happy. But at home, nah, we're not. But that's what we do to please other people.
Yeah. And what she didn't realize, and what a lot of moms don't realize, is that when they're saying yes to something over here, they're saying no to something else over there. And so it's like they're just saying no in a different way. So when you're devoting all of your time to something, doesn't matter whatever it is, like let's say it's the women's organization or to work, then you're saying no to the time spent with your kids and your family. And vice versa, like if I'm at home and saying no to work and I'm not going to go to work, that could be also a problem as well. And so there is definitely a balancing act. But if you're going to say yes and then resent it all the way through, you know what? That other person's going to feel the resentment, and you're going to feel the resentment for them, and you're not showing up as your best person and the best person that you want to be. So sometimes you have to just say no, and it's not mean, and they're entitled to their own emotions and their own feelings. Sometimes, like I have an example of this where at work, this was several years ago, I was working for a startup, and at a startup company, it's really important to get all of the business you can. You want all of the customers, you want to give them a great experience. And so you say yes to all the sales deals. Well, my role was after the sale. So I would implement the software that we were selling, and I would get this customer started on the right track. And at the time, we had a couple of people leave the company. So I had taken on their projects. I had my own projects that were coming in. And then we closed an important deal that was coming onto my plate. And there was no way I could do it all without burning out. And so I told the sales rep, like, no, I can't take this right now. So they're going to have to wait a few weeks. And she was mad. She was livid. Well, we've got to give them a great experience. We have to do these things. And I'm like, I am so sorry. So we ended up having a conversation. We brought in our CEO, because again, small startup, everyone's friends with everyone. We all wear multiple hats. And I said to my CEO, I'm like, look, this is what I have on my plate right now. I can do this new project that closed, or I can do these other three things. I can't do all of them. Which priority would you, what would you like me to prioritize? And as a group, we were able to determine like the projects I was already working on were the business's priorities, and this new customer would have to wait a few weeks. And it was only a few weeks. It wasn't a big deal. And the sales rep was still very angry and still very mad, but she wasn't mad at me. She was mad at the outcome. She wanted something better for her customer. Was she taking it out on me? Maybe a little, but it's okay, because I recognize I am not saying no to you. I still love you. I still love the customer. I'm happy to help, but I just can't do everything. And now in that case, I was very lucky that I had a CEO who helped me prioritize the most important things. Sometimes that's not always the case. Sometimes we're the one who has to make that priority, and we have to say, I can do this thing over here, but I can't do this thing, or vice versa. I can't do it all. And we just have to be okay with our own prioritization, our own, we're our own CEO of our lives. And we just have to own up to that and be okay with it. It's okay to say no.
I think another thing that the 10X book talks about is wanting what you want. And I feel like that plays into this a lot, of just like understanding that you can want to do certain things and say no to other things. It's like you guys are saying, when you say yes to something that you really don't want to do, people feel that energy. They feel the resentment. They feel that it's like pulling teeth with you. But when you say yes to something that you genuinely want to do, that you can do, it feels so much better for everyone else around. And so like the want what you want, it was a lot more about like, you just have to get down to what you really, really want, what you actually want. And then don't try and explain it. Don't try and justify it. You want what you want, and that's it. That's all you need to know, is that you want that thing, and you don't need to tell anybody else why you want it. Like, okay, let's do a great example for this podcast is let's say I want to work because I like feeling like I'm accomplishing something more than just raising my children. It fills my cup when I work. I don't need to justify that to anybody else. It's just what I desire, right? And I feel like a lot of women feel that guilt that they don't want to be with their kids all the time. And they feel guilty for wanting a career. And then they feel like they have to justify why they do their career. Well, it's because we need more money and because of this. But it's like, if you had all the money in the world, what would you be doing? Would you still be working? Because a lot of people would. Like my husband, if we had all the money in the world, he would still want to be doing something. He would still want to be working. He would still want to be progressing, being creative. Like he wants to be doing those things because it fills his cup. And he doesn't have to justify that to anybody. And I feel like a lot of people, and women especially, feel like they have to justify them having a career or having something, some kind of life outside of their kids.
And they feel guilty for wanting what they want. Yes. Like I should want something different. Yes. I should want to stay home with them. Like, no, you shouldn't. There is no rule that says you should feel these things. Like it's okay to want what you want. And I love how you use the word justify. I don't have to justify wanting a career. Another way to look at it, like if you're saying no to the PTA or the women's organization, you don't have to give an excuse or a reason for why you're saying no. Like you can just say, you know what, that doesn't work for me right now. I am so sorry. I would love to help in another way or do this help, but I don't need to say like, I don't even need a reason to say no.
Like, you just don't want to, and that's okay.
You could just say doesn't work for me right now. And that's it.
Exactly. Like I don't have to like have a reason. I don't have to be sick. Or I don't have to say like, oh, we're busy, we have something else, or go put something on my calendar really fast to say no. I can just say, you know what? No, that doesn't work for me right now. Now, I'm the type of mom that sometimes I do like helping the PTA. Like I actually do like going and doing the Halloween party or the Valentine's party if it works in my schedule. I think that is so fun. But a lot of the other volunteer activities at school, I can't do because of work. Like I have another obligation and I don't want to. But you know what I can do? I can contribute money. And so a lot of times, like instead of contributing my time, I'll contribute money. Or if I'm asked to make a plate of cookies for the women's organization, I'll go buy the cookies because I'm happy to contribute. I would love to contribute, but I'm not going to make the homemade stuff and I might not even go to the activity. But I'll drop it off. I'm happy to. I'm
And be okay with that. I think that is so huge. It's like, be okay with the fact that, don't try and make it so that you feel like you have to show people that you're this, you know, this amazing homemaker and you work and all of this stuff. It's like, you just do the things that work for you and you don't put on a face to try and get other people to recognize you. It's like, you go and buy cookies rather than make them homemade. And I will tell you, my mother has had so much guilt about being a working mom. And she always felt so frustrated looking at all these other stay-at-home mothers and being like, I should be like them. And I don't make homemade bread. And I don't, you know, I don't do those cookies. She always kind of had a resentment about the fact that she didn't do those things. And she felt like people judged her for that. And I love that you're just like, I just want to contribute. And this is how I can contribute. If you want that, great. If not, I'll keep it to myself. You know, it's like, this is how I can contribute and this is how I want to contribute. But you don't have to justify how and why.
My mom was the same way. Felt so guilty for staying at home and felt judged. And honestly, like when I was growing up, she probably was. And even today, I'm probably judged for some of the things that I do too. And the thing is you're always going to be judged. Everyone is always going to be judged. And it's just, are you going to make the voices outside of yourself louder than your own voice so it drowns out what you're feeling and wanting? And or are you going to allow your voice, your desires, your needs to be the loudest one in your life? Which one are you going to pick?
So you're coaching moms, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have a lot of moms that have grown up with what they should do.
Oh, yeah.
So to say, just do what you want, they may nod their head. I mean, I've been through this with a lot of people, but what do you do to assist them to get it? I mean, it's not just, I understand that, but they're still judging. I mean, judgment is a very powerful dynamic we've learned in our society. What would you say to assist them to get through the judgment so that, yeah, they're not just nodding and going, yeah, I shouldn't judge me. But see, even that's a judgment. I'm shitting on myself that I shouldn't. Yeah. Do you have some ways that you work with women to get through that?
Yeah, great questions. So one of the things that I do is I try to help women see, to go back to your first question, like help them understand even what they want, because a lot of them have been drowning out and suppressing their wants for a really long time because they have been placing their kids and their husband and work above everything else to the point where they don't even know what they want anymore. And if I gave them an extra 10 hours a week, they don't even know what they would do with it. And I'm like, really? Like, go get a massage, read a book, go for a bike ride. Like, I could like rattle off a bunch of things, but for a lot of them, they just don't even know. So sometimes it takes some exploration to say, okay, like when you were a kid or before you got married, what did you do with free time? Like, what did you want to do? And help kind of reawaken some of those passions and those things that they forgot. And remember, like, oh, you know what? I'm a human outside of being a mom. Like I'm a person. So the first thing I'll do is I'll often start with like, what are some of the things that you want? And that's often really big for women. It's like, oh, do you know what? I really want this thing. And often they can figure out how to start inserting that into their life. They've just forgotten about it. The other thing that I'll do is sometimes they'll be like, oh, I don't have time to do any of those because I feel so guilty for prioritizing myself over other people. And there's a concept I like to explain to them, which is we all have an equal seat at the table in our family. My needs are just as important as my child across the table. And they're just as important as my husband's needs. Now, sometimes my child's needs take priority. I mean, I mentioned my child has epilepsy. And so, you know, if she's having a seizure, obviously we prioritize her first. Or if we have to go get, you know, an EEG done for her annual visit, like we'll prioritize that. But there's other times that I need to be prioritized too. We just forget that we have an equal seat at the table with our family. We often think we don't even have a seat at the table at all, and that everyone else at the table is more important. And so helping them understand like, hey, you know what? A workout in the morning is really important for you. So for me, like, and that's actually really important for me, is making sure I get my workout in every day helps my mental and physical health. if I'm not good in good mental health, my kids are not in a good space. So my kids know first thing in the morning, mom's on the bike downstairs or lifting weights. We come down and we sit there and we play on the iPad for an hour. And wow, do they think that's great? Like, woohoo, we sit on the beanbag and play on the iPad. And with these new two kiddos that come, they've never seen an indoor bike before. And so it's like, okay, we're learning that this is new. And you know what, for my little guy, who's three, my new little foster son, we bring down a bunch of cars. He has a granola bar and he has a drink of water because that will get him through my bike ride. And so it's like, I put everything in place so that mom has her time so I can be a better mom. And so sometimes it's helping them realize like, okay, how can we work and give you an equal seat at the table too? And it doesn't take much often, like, you know, an hour workout, half an hour workout, whatever it is.
Yeah, I think that's awesome because a lot of women do. I think you said, you know, a lot of women think there's no seat at that table. We are the servant in the background. That's what I feel like women become, is they are the servant in the background, and everybody else, we are there to serve. That's all we're there for. But it turns out that no, we have a place and we have a seat at that table, and our needs need to be met just as much as everybody else's needs. And in fact, I don't know if I'm wrong in saying this, but a lot of times mothers who don't get their needs met, they're not giving their best self to their kids because they're in some way suffering because they don't have good mental health or they don't have good physical health or something, like they're lacking. And so they can't give their best selves. And so when we put ourselves in the background, we're actually, in my opinion, our families don't thrive as well as they could if we were to say we have an equal right to the things that we need. I wanted to come back to a thought that you said about the mom guilt and about people judging women, because that's such a thing. So one thing my mentor, he has these videos that he's putting together, but there was a quote in one of them that said, whichever thoughts you're going to make important in your mind are going to create your results. So if you think that someone is judging you, or you think that you're just not as good of a mom, or you can't handle this stuff, or that you don't ever have enough time, that's what you are going to get. And you're going to get more of that judgment. You're going to get more of that guilt. You're going to get more of those things, because those are the thoughts that you think are the most important because they affect you the most. But when you make that shift to, my husband, also, we've been reading the Gap and the Gain by the same author, but that's a similar shift, is like, instead of giving all of your thoughts to all of your outside circumstances, you look at the inside, you look at you and what matters to you, what you want, and you're going to get more of what you want when you focus on those thoughts rather than all of those other noisy thoughts of judgment and fear and guilt. And then you can start being in what they call the gain. You start seeing what you have, you start being grateful for what you have, and you receive more of what you're grateful for. So I think that's an awesome shift. And something that you mentioned was like, which thoughts are you going to give power to? Which ones are going to have, are basically going to give you what you want, or give you the results that you see?
And whichever thought we give voice to, or that's the loudest in our brain, we start looking for evidence to prove it's true. Even if it's a bad or a negative thought that's like not serving us in any way. When my mom got her master's degree, oh, it was in the 70s. So it's been a long time. She always she told me about her experience getting her master's degree. She's like, I could prove basically any thought or any thesis that I had with research. And it could be completely contradictory. And she's like, I could prove anything. And then fast forward ahead, you know, 30 years when I was getting my master's, the same was true. It's like, I could prove with evidence anything that I wanted to put in my thesis. And there were some authors that I chose to listen to and some that I didn't, because I'm like, they're full of baloney. But I mean, obviously they were authors, like they were writing stuff, but I just didn't agree with it. And the same is true for our own thoughts, is that we will look for evidence to prove whatever it is that's true, and to prove whatever it is that we're thinking. And if we're going to choose to dwell on a negative thought, we're going to look for evidence that someone is judging us, or, you know, that judgment is going to be bad and affect us. And one of the things that our brain does this naturally. Our brain looks and scans for problems because it wants to make sure that we are safe. And you know, we're not in a position anymore where we have to worry about lions and tigers and bears eating us and that we have to run away. There is no reason for a fight or flight, but our brain doesn't know the difference between a judgment from somebody that lives in our neighborhood and a bear chasing after us. It will give the same fight or flight response, and it will scan for those problems to make sure that we're safe. And so often we'll focus on those negatives because that's just what our brain does. It wants to make sure that we're safe. We have to redirect it away to something else that's true. And I love the concept from one of my mentors that where she said, we need to give equal airtime to the thoughts that serve us as well as the thoughts that, you know, maybe are negative or are, you know, that protective thought. We need to give equal airtime to both of them. We can't just dwell on the negative. We need to dwell on the positive as well.
Well, I think, and in addition, you can't just dwell on the positive either. It's that it's, you know, Michael talks about this a lot about resistance. It's resisting the fact that these things are happening. And rather than being in acceptance and knowing, okay, well, I don't have the money right now, but I know that there's going to be a way for me to afford what I want to afford at some point. You know, it's like, I don't know. That's a bad example. But like you have the being in resistance and saying, okay, for example, you're going through this life-changing moment. You feel amazing. And then one day you feel like crap. You yell at your kids. Your house is a disaster. You're putting your kids in timeout and you have all of these negative thoughts. And the whole day you're sitting there thinking like, what is wrong with me? I was doing so good. I was so positive. I had all this good energy. And now look at me. I'm so mad at myself. And that's us resisting. There's something happening. So you had a bad day. Like you were tired. You had, maybe you had PMS. Turns out we're women, we have that. You know, it's like, but when you're in resistance, those things hang on to you and they drag you down. And then you get more and more of those things. And my mentor talks about it as like, when you resist those negative emotions and those negative feelings, you're basically telling them to put their dukes up and start fighting, you know, rather than just letting them go.
Fight or flight?
Because they're going to fight. For to be heard and to be seen, just like your positive emotions. And so it's like you have to accept that sometimes we do have negative emotions. And I love that Michael is so like, just take judgment out of it. Anger is anger. Love is love. And one is not positive or negative. We probably want to feel love more often, but it turns out we were given anger for a reason. And we just have to accept like, I'm angry right now and that's okay. This is why I'm angry. Okay. Like I do a lot of self-talk and a lot of, what is that called? Parts work, where I talk to myself and try and figure out what the underlying problem is. But that is my way of embracing those moments when I really feel disappointed in myself and angry at myself for not doing what I wanted to do, not being the best person that I wanted to be. And when I finally embrace and accept those feelings and those thoughts, they go away. And then I'm able to come back the next day and be my bright and sunny self again. So I love that you said that.
I love your like what you're saying here about resistance to feeling your own emotions. So like going back to your example of the day is horrible, kids are in timeout, your house is a mess, and you're just angry or frustrated. Like if you add on judgment, like you're judging yourself for feeling that way, like now you have a pile of anger and frustration, which just feels awful. And then you layer on judgment on top of that, that feels even worse. So now you're just making yourself feel worse. Like if you just, like Michael said, if you just take out the judgment, then all you're dealing with is the anger or frustration. And you're just allowing yourself to be human. Like, well, of course you're angry. Of course you're frustrated. Like these kids are screaming bloody murder and they're running around and hitting each other. Like, well, of course you are. You're human.
Well, where your focus goes, energy flows. I didn't make up that little trite statement, but so if you're resisting anger, you're focusing on anger. And then you wonder why you can't get out of it. And then you're fighting. No, no, no. You're not really putting up your dukes to anger. You're putting them up for yourself. You're fighting yourself. And so, you know, because your whole focus is on the angry. And then you go into, I shouldn't be angry. Or when my mother died back in 1998, I was 44 years old. People said, you should feel happy. Well, I didn't. And I know they meant well. So I wasn't angry at them, but it's like, no, I'm kind of scared here. My mama died. I've seen people die, but not my mom. And where is she? Is she okay? And I had to go through that. And I knew that I got to go through this. And it was hard. It was dark. It was challenging. You know, I got to speak at her funeral. I don't know. I might not be the most bright light at that funeral. But if I hadn't done that, I would have still been in mourning. My father never really let himself grieve my mother's death. And I think he hastened his own demise as a result. But the other thing I want to say is, you know, when you were talking earlier, Alyssa, about that, okay, if you don't feel like you have a place at the table, you're just doing things for everybody, but you're empty. When you're empty, you cannot give from an empty well. And if people, this is fathers and mothers and whoever, if we do not fulfill ourselves, meaning fully filled spiritually, and it doesn't mean religion, it can be, but it doesn't mean that, we can't give. You cannot give from a dry well. So if you're dry inside, empty inside, and sometimes we think I must be a good person because I'm empty, you can't really be giving. You're only in the act of doing something, but it's not the same thing as when you give your time to your children and you're engaging with them. That is different than I'm going to spend time with them, but I resent it. I'm tired. I don't want to do this, but okay, kids, we're going to have fun. Right? But when you're fulfilled, then you can spend that time with them. And it is truly an act of giving. And it comes back tenfold, typically.
And I just want to piggyback on what you said about filling the well. We in our family, we talk about it as like filling our bucket or drain, things that fill our bucket or drain our bucket. But a concept I teach is also, I call it like micro recharges. So if you think about your phone's battery is going down throughout the day, very similar to your own physical body and your mental capacity. Like your battery is getting drained throughout the day. Sometimes, like if you know you're going to be in a place where you're not going to be able to recharge your phone, you're going to go plug your phone into the wall for 10, 15 minutes and just get some more charge into your phone so that you can go out and about and do whatever you need to do. Likewise, micro recharges for our body and our mind can be really helpful as well. Because sometimes what a lot of moms do, it's like, well, if I can't fill my whole bucket at once, it's not worth it. So I'm not going to do it. Because they think like, well, I need a whole day to do that. And it's like, no, you actually just need little micro recharges throughout the day. Like, today, I was feeling really tired this morning. I got on my first call at work and I'm just like, ugh, I cannot do the rest of this day. But I had a break and I'm like, okay, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn on my like music, a song that I like, and I'm just going to dance around for a minute. And it lifted my spirits. Like it's just a micro recharge, just something to give you a little bit of a battery boost as you go throughout the day. Problem is we forget those micro recharges and we think they have to be this big all-in event, and they don't. They just have to be tiny, small things.
And I think making sure that you're seeing those tiny small things as recharges, because sometimes when we spend 5 minutes scrolling on Instagram or spend 5 minutes playing games on our phone, that's not always a recharge, or at least it doesn't feel like a recharge. So, you know, noticing what recharges you and then doing those small things and recognizing those small things, because sometimes we'll go and we'll do those things and then we'll come back and be like, I don't ever get time for myself. But actually, we did. We took time to do those little things. So just that. And then I know we have to wrap up here, Shannon. So I wanted to ask, do you have any, if you could give a woman one word of advice as far as a working mom goes, what would it be? Or even a challenge, even if you wanted to challenge our listeners who have listened to this podcast today, like what would you challenge
them? I like that challenge. Sometimes we feel like we are not doing enough, or we're not doing good enough. And so we try to do more. Like a lot of us are perfectionists. We try to do more. We try to give more of our bucket. And so the challenge that I've really loved lately is, what is the 2-minute version of that task? Or what is the 2-minute version of the task you're avoiding? So instead, and what that does is it gets us out of, I have to spend so much time doing all of this stuff. Instead, it's just a different way of helping reframe our brain to simplify things. What is it that we can simplify? What's the 2-minute version of that thing you need to do today? If it's cleaning the bathroom, what can you do in 2 minutes? By the way, I'm good at cleaning a toilet in 2 minutes, but maybe not the whole bathroom. You know what I mean? Like, what's the 2-minute version that's going to help you get something done or feel better
awesome.
Today?
I love that. Michael, did you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, this has been a recharge. I mean, this has been great. I was wondering what I would have, you know, because it's about working moms and stuff, but this has been great. This has been.
Do you know what's helpful for me, Michael, though, is like, I love listening to my male mentors, my male counterparts, to hear how they think about things. There's no working dad guilt. And so understanding like why they don't have that working dad guilt or how they think differently about it has helped me reframe my own thoughts too. So you brought a lot to this discussion that I've really appreciated.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It was great. This was wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Shannon. Thank you for joining us on our podcast today, Shannon. It was a pleasure. And I feel like we got so much out of this. You said you had a little free gift for people, and we're going to include that in the show notes. Do you want to share a little bit about that before I sign off?
Yes, I would absolutely love to. Okay. So this is, I talked about it earlier, getting an hour to yourself without sacrificing your family. We've talked a lot about the working mom guilt today, and this is something that you get to do for yourself without feeling guilty. So it's just a quick PDF that gives you some tips on how to do this. So I think we'll put it in the show notes afterwards. Also, if you want to connect with me at all, you can find me on Instagram at Shannon Rosaire Coaching, and then also on LinkedIn. I've been spending a lot of time on LinkedIn lately, coaching and providing value for people who are trying to grow in their profession as well as in their own mothering. So yeah, come follow me. I would love to hear from all of you.
And that's Shannon Rosaire Coaching, right?
Shannon Rosaire Coaching on Instagram. And then on LinkedIn, it's under Shannon Dame Rosaire.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Shannon. And if you want to send those to me, I can put those in the show notes as well, so people can follow you and find you pretty easily. Well, thank you guys so much for coming and joining us on another episode of You Already Are. If you guys liked this episode, go ahead and hit the subscribe button, share it with your friends and family, share it maybe with a woman you know who is a working mom and would love to hear some encouragement from us. Reach out to us. Let us know what you thought of this episode. Reach out to Shannon. I'm sure she'd love to hear from anybody and answer any questions you guys have. And we'll catch you guys next time on You Already Are. Thank you for joining us on another episode of You Already Are. Remember, you already are everything you aspire to be. Continue this journey and embrace the beauty it brings. Create the life you desire and remember your infinite worth and infinite potential. Until next time, live as though you already are.